Nurses and Hypochondriacs, the podcast that brings nurse experts, patients, and hypochondriacs together to discuss hot topics in healthcare. And here is your host, Ercilia Pompilio.
Hello. Welcome to Nurses and Hypochondriacs. It's me, your host, Ercilia Pompilio. And today, you know, this is a really interesting topic that we're going to talk about because there's a lot of misdiagnosis with it. People go to doctors and doctors are like, hey, this disease does not exist in California. I've heard it for many, many years. But interesting enough, starting May of 2017, I started to see a ton of media coverage saying that, yes, this does exist in California. And so today, what we're going to be talking about is Lyme disease. It's that tick that carries a little bacteria and makes a lot of problems. So I am so excited to bring on our guest today. She is LA-based actress and writer of a blog, soon-to-be podcast called Too Sick and Naked, Healing Out Loud. She's also the co-founder of Wellness Companions, a company that supports people with illness. Welcome, Jackie Shea.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being on. Are you ready to go rogue with us and bear it all?
So ready to go rogue.
Cool. So tell us your story. Take us on your journey. What happened?
Okay. So November, I'll try to be as succinct as possible with this very long story. November 17th, 2013, which was 4 days before my 26th birthday, I was on a photo shoot in Franklin Canyon, Los Angeles, and I was, funny enough, trying to capture the part of me that was both elegant and loved rolling around in dirt. So I was like wearing these short, elegant dresses and like rolling around in piles of leaves because I both really like glamour and, you know, not showering for 3 days and like hiking. So in an effort to capture that, I got bit by a tick, which later became really funny because I found all of these photos of myself like tree hugging and in the trees and in the dirt. And I was like, oh, of course I got bit by a tick. Like, I love the woods. And I left the woods that day thinking to myself, because I'm from the Northeast, actually, so I've known about Lyme disease all my life. I grew up actually getting tick checks every time we went to Connecticut. But only when we went to Connecticut.
Because Connecticut is the number one endemic area where Lyme disease is just running rampant. And so this is why nobody believes that Lyme disease is in California. It's only in Connecticut.
Connecticut.
And if you look at the CDC has a map and it's just all blacked out on Connecticut.
It's so funny. There is a Lyme, Connecticut, right? That's where Lyme disease was founded, in Lyme, Connecticut, in Old Lyme. And guess who's from Lyme, Connecticut? My boyfriend.
That's interesting.
Isn't that so funny?
So serendipitous.
I know. So I've actually been there on a few occasions since having the disease. And I've been very careful every time. So I left the woods that day thinking, I should check for ticks. Like, if there was ever a time, I was really, really rolling around today. And then I immediately thought, oh, there are no ticks in Southern California. And I did not check. And I did not shower that night. I just didn't do any checking. And about 10 days later, I started to get these itchy rashes on my body. They were really, really itchy. And the first one came out on my calf and my thigh. And, you know, at first I was just like, oh, that's weird and annoying. Maybe a mosquito bit me in the night or something. And then days went by and they got worse and they started to spread. And, you know, I started doing all of this crazy research, like up all night with anxiety, showing everyone I ran into or met my rat. What do you think this is? And nobody had an answer. And a lot of people said, it's a rash. Like, a rash is a rash. Give it a couple weeks, it'll go away. No big deal. But they just kept getting worse. And this one on my calf specifically grew and grew and grew and grew and grew.
Kind of like a bullseye, right?
Yeah. Well, what happened was is that it grew so much and then the center started to clear. So that process, though, took 2 weeks. By 2 weeks, I had these rashes all over my body and had this one specifically on my calf that was just like enormous and very painful. So I'm researching. I'm like, I have psoriasis. I have bed bugs. You know, I have this. I have that. And I'm like, you know, well, I hope it's not psoriasis and I hope it's not bed bugs because I'm vain. So I'm like all of these things, you know, and if it's bed bugs, I have to throw away everything. Such a stress and all around and around and around. And then finally I was in tears because I was about to go shoot something. And a friend of mine said, you want to go see my acupuncturist? This way you can see somebody because, side note, I did not have insurance. So I wasn't running to the doctor with a rash. This is pre-Obamacare. I was 26, which meant I was off of my mom's insurance. I was a waitress and I didn't make enough as an actor to have insurance. So I go see this acupuncturist who says something like, it could be a lot. He's my acupuncturist to this day and I love him, but he did not know what these rashes were. And he said something along the lines of, like, take these pills and it's sure to be better in the next couple days.
What were the pills?
They were Chinese medicine, something or other.
Some type of herbs.
They were herbs, yeah. He was like, for sure, though, this will make it better. It's probably an allergic reaction. I was like, cool. And he was like, put tea tree oil on them every day. And I followed his instructions perfectly. And they only got worse consistently. And I told him and I told him again and he finally wrote me an email saying you need to go to the doctor because I if those pills aren't working.
Did he give you a diagnosis though? Did he tell you what it was?
No, he said it could be syphilis, which was super fun to hear.
I love that.
I was like, oh, syphilis. Okay. He said, but most people were saying like it's probably – you're probably using a new detergent. And I was like, I'm definitely not. And – you know, and then I had just started doing trapeze at the time.
Aww.
And I was like dating my, you know, 20-year-old trapeze instructor. And I was so into,
of course you were.
I was so into this trapeze thing. And so I was like, oh, maybe it's trapeze. Maybe it's like the chalk that I'm putting on my hands. So I stopped going to trapeze. And then I was like, maybe I'm drinking too much caffeine. So I quit drinking coffee. I mean, I just went through all the stuff. I used like 10 different creams that were given to me, you know, and nothing helped. Nothing helped. So he didn't really have a solution. He said, go to the doctor. And that is when I drove the next morning, early the next morning, to Exer Urgent Care. And I walked in and I remember being like really not wanting to spend the whatever $150 it was going to cost me. And I mean, so funny because, you know, I'm like 6 figures in later to healing and treating Lyme. But that couple $100 was like real rough for me. And I saw the doctor and he said – he looked at the rashes and said, have you been having any headaches or tired lately? And the thing about my rash was that it was not super typical. Like it was all over my body and it was it wasn't like if you look up Lyme disease rashes, you'll see this very typical bullseye rash. And while mine was a bullseye, it was also like a little disfigured and raised and painful and itchy. And if you look it up, like they'll tell you that that's not – that would never happen.
Well, I was doing a lot of research and I've seen several pictures of different types of rashes. So for Lyme, and I think it could present in very different forms. It just depends on the person. And I think it depends on the person's cortisol level too. Mm-hmm. And how the saliva from the Lyme, and we'll talk all about that in a bit, reacts with the person's biochemistry.
Oh, good. You're stuff. Very smart.
So,
so that's
I just did
good.
A lot of research.
So that's great. Obviously, this doctor understood that too because he said, have you been tired or had headaches lately? And, you know, a few days earlier, like a friend had said to me, why are you green? Like, green? Yeah, he, I was working,
green, like the Grinch green?
Yeah, green. He, like, I was, I had these rashes and I was going around to everybody, and sometimes people would be like, God, you know, your lips are blue, or like, you know, your coloring's real off. Are you okay? You know, and I remember when he was like, why are you green? And I was like, yeah,
well,
I
you
don't.
You do have a very pale coloring, so I could kind of see how.
Why, thank you.
Not in a bad way. You're very fair.
I'm very fair.
You're very fair. So you, any little color change, I think people can really tell.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they'll tell you.
This is actually color in my face, though, if you can imagine.
Yeah, you look very healthy right now.
You can imagine.
Yeah, you have pink cheeks. You're very healthy.
How sick I was, yeah. And how pale I was.
Wow.
And my lips were blue a lot of my illness. But, like, yeah, so I was – so you could tell. And I was green. And I was like – so he asks if I had headaches or fatigue. And I was like, yeah, but I also quit drinking coffee. So, like, who knows, you know? And he laughed at me and said, I think you – he said, have you been – then he said, have you been in the woods lately? And in that moment, I had literally been just, like, racking my brain trying to figure out where I had gotten these rashes, and I had totally forgotten that I was in the woods because it was, like, 10 days earlier.
Right.
Before I got the rashes, which is normal. The rashes don't come out till like, 10 to 14 days. So – in that moment, I knew he was going to tell me Lyme disease, and I knew the moment I contracted it. And I said, oh, shit. Yes, I have been in the woods, but like, you know, 3 weeks ago, November 17th. And he was like, I think you might have Lyme disease. And he gave me this steroid shot and said, like, if this steroid works, then it's not Lyme. And the steroid will probably keep you up for a while. And I fell asleep immediately because I was exhausted. and they did a PCR. But anyway, in that moment, I knew I had Lyme. And that's when I started seeking out a solution. But also, I was very excited that I had Lyme and that it wasn't bed bugs and that it wasn't psoriasis, because I had this idea that, oh, Lyme disease equals antibiotics. I've been taking antibiotics all my life. I've had all sorts of infections. They've always worked.
Right.
So, like, cool. And
if there was a treatment for it, that's what you were happy about. Like, oh, great. Now I have a diagnosis.
I have a diagnosis.
And there's a treatment.
I'll be
fine.
You
knew about Lyme. You knew about the ticks. You had that history. And you're like, great.
I'll be fine in a month.
Right.
Or I'll be fine in a week. Like, just got to take some antibiotics. Well, 4 years later. and that began my journey. And I did take antibiotics, and I got sicker and sicker. And before I knew it, you know, I took antibiotics for like 10 months. I was on 5 different kinds at a time. I did intramuscular antibiotics. I, by that point, had lost 20 pounds. I was 95 pounds. Oh. I was not able to hold my own head up, so I couldn't sit. Like, I couldn't sit in a chair that didn't have, like, a wall behind it or a wall on either side.
Oh, wow.
I was in a wheelchair for any like long distances, which meant like, you know, a block or two. I was getting piggyback rides a lot because I couldn't stand up. I'd sit down and couldn't stand up again. I couldn't sleep at night. I would not sleep for 4 nights in a row, and I would take, you know, a host of sleeping medications. My muscles were twitching from my head to my toe. I was in horrifying pain. My joints hurt. My muscles hurt. I mean, the list really goes on and on and on. But I started to heal when I went holistic. And that was in the beginning of 2015. I went all holistic, and I did everything from, like, getting all my blood cleaned in Bali. To going
so
to Florida.
Before that, the antibiotics that they gave you, do you remember what they were? I mean, the treatment regimen for Lyme disease is doxycycline. And that's only in children older than 8. It's adult in children older than 8 years old. Cefuroxin and amoxicillin. And these are the basic antibiotics. So you did get treated with those.
Well, I got treated with those and then some. So I got treated with – I found a Lyme disease specialist. But before I found the specialist, I went to a dermatologist. and said the day after I went from Xer, I went to a dermatologist and said, I think this is Lyme. And she said, it may very well be. Here's 10 days of doxycycline.
Okay.
You'll be fine. This is your treatment.
But nobody ever gave you a test like for Lyme disease.
I was given.
Did you get an ELISA test, a Western blot, or a polymerase chain reaction test?
I got a PCR.
PCR. That's the polymerase chain reaction. I have problem with my vowels. Anyway, and that's for persistent Lyme disease, like so, what you had.
Right. So I got a PCR at Xer that day.
Okay. Oh, you did.
And it came back negative.
Okay.
But I knew that once I did research and talked to a friend who had had Lyme for years, I knew that the only reliable testing was through Igenix Lab, Western blot, IgG, and IgM.
Okay.
So I found – and then the dermatologist gave me 10 days of doxy and said, that's your treatment. And I had known enough already from my own research that that was not a sufficient treatment for Lyme disease.
Right.
So I found –
because your symptoms were persisting, right? You still had symptoms.
Well, it was new. I mean, I was only, 3 weeks in at that point.
But after the antibiotics, did you feel any better?
Yes. So when I took the doxycycline, my rashes went away.
Oh, okay.
And that was the beginning of me being like, obviously,
this is it.
But when I saw a Lyme specialist again, because of all the research I had done and people I had spoken to, they were like, look, 10 days is not sufficient. Like, you need a very long course of antibiotics and – you'll probably be fine because you found it so early. So I went to a Lyme specialist and she gave me 2 months of cefuroxime, that one.
And the amoxicillin.
No.
No, not amoxicillin.
Cefuroxime, doxycycline, and tinidazole, Tindamax, or do you know that one?
Okay. No, I don't.
So when you get Lyme, it's like a shapeshifter. So it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Lyme disease and what it is. So basically, what Lyme disease is, it comes from, mostly found in the Northeast and the Midwest, which is why nobody thinks it's in California or Los Angeles. It comes from a little tick, okay? It's transmitted by a bite from a black-legged tick. And the name of the tick is Exodus scapularis. And basically, it carries a bacteria. It's called Borrelia burgdorferi, okay?
Yeah, which I never
and
say.
And not all ticks carry Lyme disease. Not all ticks carry this bacteria. And this bacteria primarily is in the tick's saliva, which is why they say when it bites you, when it goes in, you have to be very careful when you're taking it out. And you have to take it out with like tweezers and stuff. And how it was founded, because we were talking about the city Lyme, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it was all but unknown until 1977 when Alan Steer, a rheumatologist at Yale, produced the first definitive account of the infection. And the condition was initially thought to have been an outbreak of juvenile rheumatoid arthritis in and around Lyme, Connecticut.
That's okay? Right.
And in 1982, Willie Burgdorfer, a medical entomologist at the National Institutes of Health at the Rocky Mountain Laboratories determined that the infection was caused by previously unknown spirochete Borrelia. So the bacteria, it's like a spirochete, so kind of like a corkscrew. Mm-hmm. And this is why it makes it so hard to get rid of, because what it does, so antibiotics, first of all, when you take antibiotics, it's supposed to kill the bacteria, but it also kills all your good bacteria in your gut. And so from my reading, what I found out is it becomes part of your microbiome, part of the city in your gut, because it screws itself into like your gut, your whole body, basically. And it's really
your heart
to get rid of, your heart.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so this is what makes it so difficult, because it corkscrews itself into your normal biome, and it won't come out. So, and when your immune system is down, you get more symptoms. But when you're nice and healthy, it kind of goes dormant, right?
Yes. So that's, there's so many different layers to like understanding why Lyme disease makes people sick. And,
exactly.
And it's so hard to get rid of. And one of them is, yes, the spirochete, the corkscrew factor. It's like an amazing, it hides inside of you in these incredible ways. You can kill it with one antibiotic, but then it will turn into like a cyst form, like the it shapeshifts in your body.
Exactly. So I think that's a great way to put it. It shapeshifts.
It's crazy. And then on top of that, it builds the spirochete builds up this biofilm. And in order to get to the bacteria itself, you need to break the biofilm.
Exactly.
And in order to break the biofilm, you need something other than antibiotics. So it's like this multi-layered disease. And one of the things I always say to people when they contact me is like, you kill, you detox, you build your immune system. So like,
very good point.
You kill with antibiotics, you detox with diet, infrared saunas, acupuncture, whatever, because all of this dead bacteria is now inside of you and it needs to come out, and then you build your immune system. For me, the reason why people get as sick as I did is because they almost always have something else going on. Like heavy metal toxicity is a really big one, mold toxicity, other diseases, whatever. For me, I had hypogammaglobulinemia. So I had an immune disorder that I have had my whole life, which is why I've been treated with antibiotics for all of these years, but no one ever really found it because I was functioning fine-ish. I mean, I was functioning fine. And then this one doctor, Dr. Lehman, who is also a Lyme specialist in LA, tested my immunoglobulin levels, which is an immunoglobulin panel, an IgG panel, and IgA and IgM levels. And they all came back crazy low.
Wow.
And I had like no immune system. And she was so
excited. It's like you were that guy in the bubble. The boy in the bubble.
The boy in the bubble from Seinfeld.
Yeah, so from Seinfeld. But when I was growing up, we used to have these things called the Weekly Reader. And so we would read about the boy in the bubble, and he had no immune system, and he literally had to live his whole life in this bubble. And I think John Travolta had made a movie about the boy in the bubble. And then there was this other comedic movie about the boy in the bubble. I forgot who was in it. But yeah, I think he ended up dying. But I was so obsessed with the boy in the bubble. It was like, oh my God, look at him. He's living in a bubble and he doesn't have any immune system. We'd always read about him. And I think I was like in the second grade, third grade or something like that. It was pretty insane.
Oh my
God. But you
were
kind of like that. So kind of. Living with no immune system.
It wasn't. I would have to amend that and say a low immune system, because the people that have
no immune system,
it's very different. It is of very course. Different than what I was experiencing, which is just that I was like highly susceptible and that I didn't really have like my immune system was kind of tapped out, let's say, for like right. all the fighting. But my white blood cell count was always pretty good, and you know, so I was fighting, but not – I couldn't
– Right. And I had asked you over the phone when we originally chatted if you had breast implants, and you said no, because that is one of the biggest issues right now too, with a lot of women taking out their breast implants because they are getting an autoimmune response to it. Their immune system is fighting against these. And several people with Lyme disease, and we talked about Yolanda Hadid, had had that problem. She got Lyme and she had to take her breast implants out because she was getting incredibly sick and it was causing more autoimmune issues.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very grateful that I don't have breast implants. I had other things, like I had amalgams. I had another thing.
That everybody has amalgams almost. Like I have amalgams.
That's another thing.
Did you get yours taken out?
I did. I got them taken out in Bali because it was affordable to get them taken out there.
So tell us about – so you got diagnosed with the hypogammaglobulinemia.
It's a hard one.
Yeah. I have this form of dyslexia where it's really hard for me to pronounce vowels, so I have to do it super slow. But hypergammaglobulinemia – and you get treated, right, with the they start giving you gamma globulin.
No, they actually didn't start. I found out I had low immunoglobulins without actually hearing that word, hypogammaglobulinemia. And I said and then I went off to Bali to get all my blood cleaned.
So tell us about your Bali trip. So how did you learn about that?
So what I did to get well and what I always suggest people do is find the people who have the disease that you have that got well and ask them what they did. And so I found people that got well and I followed every suggestion they gave me. And one of those people told me, who I'm still close with to this day, told me that she went to Bali to this ozone therapy clinic.
Interesting.
And I went.
Who runs the ozone therapy clinic?
It's this guy, Dr. Chandra, who I just love. He's wonderful. And they don't have a website. You're more than welcome to find me and reach out to me for information if you hear this. But it is a beautiful, it's a wonderful experience, and it definitely started to change things for me. It was a very hard experience. I had to stay there for 2 months. You have to stay for a minimum 2 months to get the treatment done.
Staying in Bali is hard for 2 months.
yeah, it is when you're that sick. But it was so hard for me. It was because it's humid, and you know, I wasn't sleeping. I mean, it was, and the treatment was like.
So, where did you stay in Bali? Is it like, are you staying in a hut? Are you staying in a hotel?
So I have this.
Do they have a clinic?
Like, they do not. Like?
So, paint us a picture of what this ozone clinic is, or this ozone treatment place is.
Yeah, they have two centers in different parts of Bali. I stayed in Ubud, the famous Eat, Pray, Love town. Awesome. And I had this wonderful friend, who just came with me for 2 months.
Oh, wow.
And also paid for our Airbnb and, like, you know, cooked for me and... Yeah, she is amazing. But so I would, you know, go get all of my blood kind of drained and put back in me.
How did they do that? What's that all about?
They do like 2 liters at a time.
So are they giving you like a dialysis? Do they have you hooked up to a machine?
Hooked up to a machine. The blood is coming out and going back in. So it's cycling. It's going into the machine and then coming back into me. So like the side that was coming out was this like gunky, dark red, almost black. I mean, my blood was just so...
Wow.
And then it would come back in me like strawberries. It was so good. And I did that 10 different times over the course of 2 months. And
so were there nurses there?
There were two nurses.
Were you hooked up to like a cardiac monitor? Were you
– No.
Were you getting IV fluids?
No. So I'm being watched. I mean, it would take like 2 hours. And yeah, no, the doctor's there, the nurses are there, they're watching you. I have a friend there. We read Franny and Zoe together over the treatments. And you know, if anything ever went wrong, like the doctor was on call and he knew, but nothing. I didn't have any major issues except that I had my period for like 30 days.
Oh, wow.
And that sent me to the ER and made him pause treatment.
Wow. So you went to the ER in Bali.
I went to the ER in Bali, which was amazing. I like walked in. I don't speak the language. They get me into a doctor within 15 minutes. The doctor does an ultrasound, gives me medication, gives me direct instructions on how to use the medication. I was able to pick up the medication.
Did you tell the doctor that you had been in this blood cleaning?
Yeah, he knew the doctor that sent me there. So he knew about me. The whole thing cost me – the pharmacy was in the hospital, so I got to get my medication there, and the whole thing cost me $35.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
It was amazing.
That's super cool.
And sad that it's not like that here.
Yeah.
So – that was the only real hiccup. And then otherwise, I did 1,500 milligrams of vitamin C drips because I couldn't handle the 3,000 milligrams. And I did very long glutathione drips. Glutathione's a big one for detoxing. And It all really was hard on me.
Oh my gosh, I can just imagine.
Yeah,
I mean, just the putting you on this ozone blood cleaning machine, which I just pulled one up on YouTube right now. It just is insane. I mean, I'm just like, my eyes are popping out of my head going like, oh my gosh, like you could have died. That's the first thing that I'm thinking is that you could have totally died.
Well,
being on this machine.
Well, I could have died not being on it. I think that True. That was the thing, is that like I was so close to death at that point that like nothing really mattered.
And now, are there other people at this ozone therapy clinic in Bali?
Oh, while yeah. you're there, a lot of people know about it, especially for Lyme disease. A lot of Australians go there with
Interesting.
Lyme.
Interesting.
And so he does a really safe version, though, I should just say, called EBOO, E-B-O-O, which is only offered there. It's not offered in the U.S. And a very dangerous version of ozone is direct IV. So, like, they'll just essentially, like, shoot you up with some ozone.
Wow.
And that's very dangerous, and it's highly suggested that people don't do that.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
It is dangerous. It's not the most dangerous thing I did. I then got on IVIG when I got back, and that is
– That's intense.
That's yeah. intense, and
you
can
decide to go on the IVIG after you did the ozone therapy. Did you wait a little bit? Did you see if your levels were coming up for your gamma globulin?
I did, and they were not. Once I got back from Bali, I made it my mission to find out what the low immunoglobulin meant. And I found out that the best treatment was IVIG treatment from my doctor, who I begged to give me a session for free because I had no money to pay
yeah.
her. And that started my hunt for a doctor that would give me IVIG, which was actually quite hard. With Medi-Cal, which is the insurance I have. So it made everything a little difficult. When I started getting the IVIG, it changed my whole life. That was like really a beginning of like recovery in many ways. I would say ozone therapy was the beginning of recovery, but like IVIG was a massive life changer.
That's awesome. So you get the IVIG, you start feeling better.
And then I get overdosed on the IVIG.
You get overdosed. So tell us about that.
So I was seeing this bad neurologist. He was like just
– a lot of bad neurologists. I used to work for one.
Oh, yep. God. He was so bad. He used to kiss me on the cheek every time I came in.
Oh, no.
It was nothing compared to the gynecologist who like stuck a freaking thing inside of my vagina and said, my God, you have a tiny vagina.
No! No!
And a beautiful uterus.
Oh, no.
So, this guy was so bad, the neurologist would look at Wikipedia in front of me. He'd be like, what do you have? And I was like, oh, I have Lyme disease. And he'd just go to Wikipedia and look at Lyme disease.
How did you know he was going on
Because
Wikipedia?
He would pull me to his computer. And he would say, come look at this. I mean, it was so bad. And one
Not time, even PubMed. Not even a peer-reviewed journal. No, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
That's where your neurologist is getting his information.
But like, and so many people
Healthcare
will hear
Healthcare in America.
This. Yeah, that's the thing. So many people will hear this, or people hear me say this and say, like, get a different neurologist or go. And it's like, yeah, do you know how long it took me to like get in with a neurologist?
It's really, usually the wait time is about anywhere from 3 to 6 months, almost a year. Most likely.
And he was the only
if it was anything like the neurologist I worked for, he had all fake patients, you know.
Oh.
He kept saying he was so busy, and I'd only get like 2 or 3 patients because I was his nurse practitioner, and I'd be like, so where are the patients? Well, you know how people are, they just don't show up. And I'm like, maybe if you call them the day before. Well, he was just having fake patients. He just would charge them even though they wouldn't come in, or if they were even on the schedule that they knew of.
Oh,
and yeah. And so, and he was like, yes, everybody wants to see me. It takes like 3 to 6 months. And it was like crazy. And I was like, he was so full of it. You
yeah.
know?
It was bad. I mean, He did not care. I sat at his computer and looked for my chart once because he was just being so incompetent.
Oh my God.
Like, such a, I can't handle incompetence on that level. And that's part of how I got well, really, because I did so much myself.
Yeah. And I think that's the, you're bringing up a really good point, is those days of the doctor knows best and the doctor has my health in his hands and is going to do everything for me are over.
Yes.
They have been over for a long time. People need to wake up and take charge of their own health and collaborate with their healthcare practitioners and not let the doctor, don't trust anybody with your, I mean, you're literally trusting someone with the light, with your life.
With your life. Thank you so much for saying that.
It's so crazy if you think about it. You shouldn't trust. You need to collaborate with that person and take just do anything that you can to get better, you know, whether it be going to see a naturopath, whether it be going to see a typical Western medicine doctor, going to acupuncture, whatever. I mean, you don't have to do all those things, but you need to know what the options are. And yeah, but that's incredible. I'm glad you're talking about that.
Yeah, I always say that I am and was my primary care provider. Like, and that everyone else was supplemental.
Yeah.
Because that's when I started to get well, was when I stopped listening to everything. Like,
and you
verbatim.
Just started to listen to yourself.
Yeah.
Your intuition.
And, you know, some of those times I really failed at that. Like, I failed. I knew that the doctor I was seeing, the neurologist, was like
– terrible.
Was terrible. And I just – I overrode my own instincts because he was going to give me the IVIG. And I knew I needed it. And I was like, this is the doctor that's going to do it. I need it, like anything to get that. And he did, and it did change my life, and it was totally worth it. However, he overdosed me, and he gave me 20, 40, 60, 80, 100. He was giving me 100 grams a month.
Wow.
Of Gamugard. And that's 5 days in a row of IV, 6 hours a day on IV. So I was spending 30 hours a month, a week, this 1 week of the month, with a nurse in my home, like totally tanked.
Wow.
And I pushed for blood tests 4 months in. I was like – or 3 months in. I was like, I need to get blood tests. Like, I need to see how this is going, you know? Like, he had never ordered another blood test. He did blood tests that I got back at the end of my fifth treatment, at the last day. I remember I was just done. They just pulled the IV out. I was the last day of the treatment, and I get these blood test results that were from a month before. So I had had another treatment
Wow.
on top of it. My liver enzymes were elevated horribly. I had no white blood cells. I had no red blood cells.
Oh, my God.
This
is just sounding like a train wreck.
And I had – and my immunoglobulins were like – through the roof.
Oh, wow.
And I remember I had a nurse there, and I was like, oh my God, my blood tests, like, have you seen this? And she was like, you might be right on track. You don't know. This might be perfect. And I was like, I don't think that having no white blood cells and elevated liver enzymes is
not
a good thing.
No.
So I left. He looked.
Starting to get into leukemia town.
Yeah.
Not a good town to go to.
Not a good town. It's a bad neighborhood.
No, bad neighborhood in leukemia.
So he...
No white blood cells. So, not a good place.
Not a good place. So he takes me... I tell him... First of all, the doctor didn't even call me. I had to call them for days and be like, have you seen these blood tests? They finally call back and schedule an appointment, and the doctor tells me, I'm not going to do this for you anymore.
Of course, because he's like, this chick's gonna like send me to the cleaners.
Yeah. So he says, I think it's too dangerous to give you IVIG, and I can't do it for you anymore.
Right, because he should be an immunologist.
Yeah.
Instead of a neurologist. Like, neurologist is brain. Immunologist, it's everything else.
Well, actually, the people that can prescribe, as you know, the IVIG are neurologist, immunologist, and rheumatologist. Those are the three.
I don't know why a neurologist would be. I mean, off topic, I don't know. I don't know. That's kind of interesting to look up.
Yeah, they're only.
But I, that's, yeah.
So I did find an immunologist. That is who I ended up that's who I get my IVIG through now. And just to give you some like perspective, now I get 30 grams a month.
Yeah. That is. Well, you're very, very tiny anyway.
60 grams less.
Oh my gosh.
Than what I was getting. And it works and it's great. And I love it. I love it so much. And I get it one day a month for 3 hours. Awesome. It's like, oh my God, I'm not sitting on the couch for 5 days. But yeah, so then I overdosed.
Oh my gosh.
And life, by the way, was still 70% better than it was when I was at my sickest with Lyme.
Right.
So like that's some perspective too. I was just – I was still so much better in that condition.
So tell us about some of the symptoms that you were having, because some of the common symptoms of Lyme disease, fever and chills. Did you have fever and chills when you first got diagnosed?
I had chills.
General ill feeling.
Yeah.
Headache, joint pain, muscle pain, stiff neck. Symptoms may come and go, which you said you had, your symptoms were kind of coming and going.
Yeah, my symptoms would go away with antibiotics at first.
Right.
The first couple rounds of antibiotics, they just took the symptoms away. And then that was not the case anymore at some point, but.
Heart problems. Did they ever do any kind of EKG?
Yeah, I have really bad.
Echocardiogram?
I have really bad heart palpitations.
Which is one of the symptoms.
Yeah, but they don't, they haven't shown up. They're not always within a 24-hour period. So like, I'll get them so bad that I stop breathing for a second, you know.
But yes, because they can cause shortness of breath, chest pain, when they get bad.
And there's also, I just want to say for any listeners, like if you're worried about having Lyme, you should definitely get tested for all the co-infections as well, which are Babesia and Bartonella and Ehrlichia, Mycoplasma. You know, those co-infections actually make you much sicker. So you have to battle the co-infections if you're going to fight the Lyme. That's just like a throw that in there. It's really important.
So maybe I should look up Wikipedia here, the different sections of Lyme disease, because you had part three or section three of Lyme disease. It goes in type three.
At some point I did. Yeah.
Type one. Type three is a neurological part of the Lyme disease. Just bringing that Lyme disease types. I had it up here.
Yeah, people with strong immune systems, they can fight it, you know, right away, and it won't go into your brain. And
yeah, so there's type 1, type 2, type 3, which type 3 has most of the neurological issues. And again, the symptoms can come and go. And type 3, like Kelly Osbourne had type 3, and I just read an article in Rolling Stone. Now, what I do for this podcast, for everybody listening, I go and I get peer-reviewed journals. I also go to what's going on in the media. You know, what are the television news stations reporting? What are the other media outlets reporting? Like, here we go. This one is Healthline that I just pulled up. On how to prevent Lyme. Talk about that in a second. And I also go to articles like from Rolling Stone that was just written.
I love that you do all this research. It makes me so happy.
Yeah. So this was May 2013, and it talks about Kelly Osbourne's journey. She didn't go to Bali. She had stage 3 neurological Lyme. She went to Germany and got treated.
Germany. Germans are so ahead of us in healthcare, and that is a big place that people with Lyme go.
Yes,
it's huge. You have to have more money. You go to Bali if you're like me and you have less money.
So she got stem cell therapy, which was different.
Yes.
So, yeah, and she said that she kept her diagnosis private because she feared the pharmaceutical companies were going to come after her.
Oh, that's horrible.
And this was like in 2004. I thought that was very interesting. So, yeah, but there's been a lot of celebrities lately getting Lyme disease, and some of the celebrities that I have, and I think we talked about it briefly, I have here a whole list. Amy Tan, which I thought was very interesting. Mm. She also has a blog, just like you.
Amy Tan had Lyme. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Amy Tan.
I know Amy Tan.
She has a whole blog about Lyme disease because I was doing research. I believe she got it in 2014, if I'm not mistaken. You should reach out to her.
I should. I had no idea.
I almost was. I was like, hey. You know, and she's very famous for writing Joy Luck Club, Bonesetter's Daughter. And yeah. She also worked on the movie Joy Luck Club. She lives in LA and New York. And she says she got her Lyme disease from a wedding in 1999, but I think she was officially diagnosed in 2014, if I'm not mistaken, from reading her blog. Singer Avril Lavigne.
Avril Lavigne came out big with it. She came out big with the fuck Lyme disease thing. hashtag fuck Lyme disease all over awesome. Instagram. Yeah.
Debbie Gibson.
Mm, oh, really?
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
So he just came out with it. I think in May 2017.
He says, and by the way, this is a good point, most men do not. It's much more females get it and get it as badly. Alec Baldwin says that he gets tired like once a year. And it's
I know,
like,
he's so busy. He used to be very, very busy. He was doing all these shows and Saturday Night Live all the time.
It's like, cool, lucky for you. Yeah. But, you know, that is the thing, too, is that men do not have the hormone complications and the complicated immune systems that women have. So they don't get as sick. Go ahead.
It's interesting. Shania Twain, Yolanda Hadid, of course, she's huge. She was on the Housewives show, Housewives of Beverly Hills, and they made a big stink of it because they thought she was lying and they thought she had Munchausen's, but her kids also, Anwar and Bella Hadid. Ben Stiller,
which I
thought was interesting. Kelly Osbourne, we just talked about her. Amy Hilfiger.
Who also just had a book come out. Both Yolanda Hadid and Amy Hilfiger just had books
Lyme
come
disease.
Out. Yeah.
Interesting. Daryl Hall, Nina Cherry, Richard Gere, which I didn't know. It was interesting. Parker Posey.
Yeah.
Jamie Lynn Sigler. She's Sopranos star. Christy Turlington. She's a model, supermodel. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Cariotti. She was the tennis pro. George W. Bush, and we talked about this. So tell us your story about George Bush.
Well, I know, so George W. Bush got Lyme while he was our president, or at least got diagnosed while he was our president, and had very active Lyme when we declared war in Iraq.
Oh, my gosh.
So... also, like, you can look back at some of his videos and see him word searching, and he's cockeyed in some of them, and he has clearly a ton of brain fog. And
he slurs a little bit.
He slurs. I mean, there are many factors that, you know, of course we all have our opinions about George W. Bush, although now they're muted considering our president today. But, like,
right.
there is another factor there, which is that he had neurological Lyme disease, and he was making decisions under the influence of, like, an insane bacteria in his body. So he got well. He healed. And they would not release how he got well because it would challenge how the government now handles Lyme disease.
Of course, because the triple antibiotics that they give, you know, which is the basic treatment for Lyme, they go, oh, you just get the antibiotics and you're well, and that's it. That's just the treatment, and you're off, and you go and do your thing. It would really challenge that, you know, and how extensive the treatment is, and how extensive the bacteria just sets into your body, like we've been talking about.
Yeah, so. It's really, if you get that sick, it's most likely that you're not going to get well with antibiotics alone.
Exactly. Now, we were talking about before when you came in and I was telling you about all my exciting research that I've been doing, how lately, since 2013, that's what my research shows, that there have been more and more Lyme disease being found in California parks, mostly in Northern California. That's where they're finding more Lyme disease. But in Los Angeles, they found it at 7 local parks. And some of these local parks were, these are the Western black-legged ticks, and also been reported in Charmelee Park, Sullivan Canyon Park, Malibu Creek, Tapia, Topanga, and Will Rogers Park. Mm. So something to look over and be careful for. This last May of 2017 and June 2017, I found so many articles, also tons of stuff in the news being reported about Lyme disease.
The Santa Monica Mountains couldn't be prettier right now, so many are hitting the trails to enjoy nature. But beyond exercise and a great view, you might be getting something extra.
There has been an uptick in Lyme disease in California and Hawaii.
Dr. Manali Chandrakar is seeing more worried patients coming in with that telltale bullseye mark on their body.
It's found in like 80 to 90% of people who have Lyme disease.
That's not true.
So why do you think it's not true?
Actually, the truth is that only like, I believe, 30 to maybe 60% of people end up having the rash. Most people do not get a rash, and that's why they go years undiagnosed. So everyone I know with Lyme disease or who has had Lyme disease did not have a rash.
So now they're sending the huge like light, like, oh yeah, listen everybody, there is Lyme in Los Angeles in California. You know, and when people come in with a bullseye rash and all these symptoms and they've been hiking, pay attention to them and don't misdiagnose them, right? Which is all very, very interesting.
It's very interesting.
Why is Lyme coming to Los Angeles? Why is Lyme coming to California? Have anybody in your research, Jackie, have you, you know, come up with any conclusions?
No, I don't know that. I think that it's been here for a long time. Like, I don't think that it's just now coming here.
I agree with you because I've been encountering several patients because people – that's my thing. People just come up to me and tell me their stories, and I've encountered several patients who've had Lyme disease or who've thought they've had Lyme disease and for many, many years, probably at least over 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's been that thing where people are like, no, this tick doesn't exist here, but it does. But one of the research articles that I found in Scientific American, which was dated September 22, 2014, blames it on climate change, of course. But we blame everything on climate change.
I mean, I think that there is something to be said about climate change, though. The ticks are not dying off in the winter on the East Coast like they once were.
Oh, interesting. So they would die off.
Yeah, that's at least what I... You know, sometimes I say things very confidently and like you should probably research them too.
No, but yeah,
This is the news that I've been given that I've ran with and that makes a lot of sense to me is that, you know, ticks are not dying off as much in the winter. So, so there are just more of them and there's more breeding and, I don't know how it has to do with climate change necessarily in terms of coming to California. It's been in Northern California for a really long time. It's actually been very bad in Northern California for a really long time.
That's what my research has shown, yeah.
So I don't know, you know, about LA, but I will say I lived in Hawaii for a couple of years and I was like real, you know, naked in the woods there all the time, like a hippie. Hawaii's just And I came here, and when I met with one of the Lyme specialists here, I remember telling her because she said, maybe you've had Lyme in the past already. Like, it kind of looks like you might have.
Well, for example, Alec Baldwin, he said he had Lyme, he got it treated, and then got Lyme disease again.
It's super easy to get it again. I mean, it seems like that would be so crazy, but I mean, if you're susceptible and you can get it, like... Ticks are everywhere. So I tell my doctor, I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean, I was crazy in Hawaii, but like, I don't think there are any ticks there. And she said, I have three patients that got bit in Hawaii.
Yeah. And they're saying that there is an uptick of Lyme disease in Southern California and Hawaii. This is this Dr. Manali Chandrakar of Santa Monica. An uptick.
I haven't heard that term,
but it's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's sad because I felt very free in Hawaii. It was like, there are no snakes, there's no this, there's no that. But, you know, I think that they're everywhere, and I think that we all need to be careful wherever we are. A friend of mine got bit in Brazil. I mean, it's in Australia, it's in Europe. Like, where isn't it?
It's in Europe, too. It says it the symptoms present differently, I guess, because they're a different type of tick in Europe. And stuff, so there's something different to look for. Also, they're saying that Lyme disease can be transferred through birth. Like, so if a mom has Lyme disease and she's pregnant, she can transfer potentially to her unborn child.
It's unfortunate. I mean, that's what I think. I'm pretty sure that's what happened with Yolanda Hadid. And yeah, it's
two children.
It gets transferred through your fetus. Like, that's proven, actually. The thing that's not proven is whether or not it's sexually transmitted. But that is talked about. That is, like, many doctors are saying that it is. Others are saying that it isn't. Some doctors, like Lee Cowden, I think, is saying that it is proven that it's sexually transmitted. And then, you know, I mean, I choose to not believe that.
Right. I think there needs to be, personally, there needs to be a whole ton of research in this area. I feel that doctors really need to pay attention to what their patients are saying and not just say there's not Lyme disease and push it off. Like you said, you just went to a doctor recently who didn't believe that you had Lyme disease.
I went to a pulmonologist because I have all these pneumonia issues because of my weak immune system. And he said – he was being very sympathetic, actually. He was like, oh, you poor thing, this and that. And I was like, well, yeah. And then the Lyme disease really complicated it. And he was like – Lyme disease? How did you get Lyme disease? As though it's some like antiquated, like, I don't know, archaic disease. It's only been out for like 40 years, 50 years. So anyway, I said, oh, I got it here in Los Angeles. And he looked at me and said, there are no ticks in Los Angeles. And I was like, God.
I don't know why people believe that. It's so bizarre.
And I'm like, I'm here to tell you that there definitely are, because I got bit, I got a rash. I mean, I don't know what it will take to change. I think we are changing, actually, the beliefs around it. But
yeah, I think it's just how people process information, you know, and it's kind of like the brain is a computer, and people will just keep believing it, unless they're doing their research, unless they're reading articles or keeping up on their data, and they're going to their conferences that are not based or not backed by pharmaceutical companies. So to give them pertinent information and data, I was reading that they wanted to come up with a Lyme disease vaccine. Had you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I did. I don't know. I mean, I'm very much on with the belief that, like, cool, like, hopefully that works, but I don't believe that we should go trusting. I think that it's the same thing as, like, be your own primary caretaker. Like,
I agree.
Get the vaccine and then take other precautions.
I agree. And so some of the precautions, like, when I know you were roaming around in the dirt and you didn't check yourself, but it is, if you're going hiking, you want to kind of just wear long pants, you want to, you know, protect your skin, and also do a check afterwards.
Yeah.
Right. And that if you do see a tick, there is a special way to take out the tick. You have to be very careful and take it out with a tweezer, and then watch how you're taking it out so that a portion of the tick doesn't remain in your skin, which can infect your blood, because it's, again, like we mentioned, in the saliva.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also, like, you know, I think it's similar to, like, cancer prevention in some ways. Like, there's a whole host of ways you can take care of yourself to build your immune system and, like, be in a position that you're just not susceptible to disease, which was something I wasn't doing, you know.
Of course, it's just eating healthy, watching your sugar intake.
Taking care of inflammation, taking care of your spiritual and emotional health, and staying calm. And
right, which is difficult to do these days, but
it's all really difficult to do. It's just, and also there is something you can put on your clothes. If you have kids, especially, and you're like, and you know you're going to be someplace that has a lot of Lyme disease, you can put this treatment on your clothes, and it will last through like 6 washes.
Yeah, I think you can do some of my research that I pulled out. You could put on DEET, and there is a certain percentage, not position, of DEET to use. Of course, you can Google it. I don't have that information right in front of me. But and also the stuff that you put on your clothes, which I think has like some type of DEET component to it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which is an anti-tick solution. But cool. So what are your takeaways from that? I mean, you started a blog, which is great. So tell us about your blog. Were you inspired to start your blog just to educate people or...
Yes. Why was I inspired to start? Oh, I was inspired to start my blog because I was inspired to write a one-woman show about my experience. And I I wasn't healthy enough to perform yet when I had that idea. So I thought, oh, I'll just start a blog and start writing my stories there and gain some traction, and then I can do this one-woman show, which I'm kind of failing at the momentum of that. But I'm but I did, you know, write weekly and have some traction with my blog, and it turned into space to educate and it's like really healing out loud. It really is a lot of just welcoming people and letting people know that they're not alone on this crazy journey. It's a really dark journey. The thing that helped me most was other people saying, like, me too, and I got better.
Right, and to develop a community with that.
Yeah.
I think that's the important thing.
I think I just want people to feel the, like, I'm not alone and there's hope. So that's how that came to be, and we – yeah.
And now you started a podcast.
And now I started a podcast that will be launching soon. And that's really fun. And the reason I started that is because I, truth be told, I have all this great writing content and I'm writing a book, and I didn't want to like pour so much energy into these blogs that give it all away. So I was like, oh, you know what I really want to do? Interview other sick people that got well.
That's awesome. So you interview other people, like, can you, because you've done two podcasts. So can you give us an example?
Yeah. So I talk to people with various illnesses that have had chronic illness or are still dealing with it today. And we go through the journey of, like, you know, what it was like before they got sick, what happened, what they're diagnosed with, informative talk, and then really, like, what are your triumphs? What are the positives that came out of it? How are you feeling today? And, like, how did you persevere? It's really living well with illness and gaining all of these new tools and sharing those tools with other people.
And that's excellent. And I think that is the wave of the future. And that's where everything's going on the healing perspective. Because a lot of times it's so disempowering to go to your physician. And even me as a nurse practitioner, I've had my issues. I've fired like 8 doctors in a row. I remember when I was with one health maintenance organization, because nobody would listen to what was going on with me, and I had symptoms, and it'd be like, oh, just take this. Oh, you're fine. Oh, there's nothing wrong with you. But it could be, like I said, very disempowering, and you don't know where to go. So you're going to the doctor. You're like, okay, well, what else am I going to do? There's no other help for me out there. But now with blogs and with podcasts and with communities that are online, let's say Facebook or Twitter, you do have sort of a support group, although sometimes it can get out of control.
Yeah.
And I've seen that where people will go in and kind of fight the doctors. And I think that that's not the idea. The idea is to collaborate and come up with solutions as a team.
Yeah.
You know, about your health, because you're like the CEO of your own company. So you're just kind of hiring consultants to work with you.
Right.
And that's a great way of seeing it.
Exactly.
So thank you so much, Jackie Shea. Let's go ahead and plug. You can follow Jackie Shea at her Instagram at Shea Jackie. That's SHEAJACKIE. Or you can contact her at me@ Jackie, JACKIESHEA.com. And also follow her blog and podcast, Too Sick and Naked, Healing Out Loud. Thank you so much for coming on. Any last words?
Thank you so much for having me. No, I think we covered it.
It was great. You were great. You and happy healing.
Happy healing.
And
thank
I can't
you.
Wait to see your one woman show once you get it into production.
You're inspiring me to do it. Thank you.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.